Ladies and gentlemen, this is this announcement for all passengers traveling on Qatar Airways flight 47.
Welcome to The Hold Room with ACC, a quick update on all things relating to airport development as well as the Airport Consultants Council. As many of you know, we host short 15-minute programs several times a month. So far, we've interviewed some ACC leaders and members, offered perspective from Washington, D.C., and hopefully provided a little insight from the Airport Consultants Council. As summer is winding down, we've been really excited to hear all of the positive feedback on this new endeavor. We hope you've enjoyed the project as much as we have. This week, ACC President T.J. Schultz is back with a discussion with HMMH's Mary Ellen Egan.
Hello, and welcome to the ACC Hold Room. It's great having you join us. This is where your one-stop shop to get all things related to airport development, current trends, and insights. And we're really excited today to have Mary Ellen Egan, who's the President and CEO of HMMH. Mary Ellen has been a long-time active participant in ACC and numerous other industry organizations. And she was the former chair of the ACC Board of Directors. And under her excellent leadership, Mary Ellen helped us to develop the update to our ACC strategic plan. And she really put a lot of time and effort into it and was very invested in that effort. And it's just great having you join us, Mary Ellen. Welcome to the Hold Room.
Thanks, TJ. It's great to be with you on the Hold Room.
Fantastic. So talk a little bit about your background and also provide a little overview of your company as well.
Sure. So I am one of those rare people these days who has worked for only one company my entire career. My undergraduate degree was in engineering, but there was a recession the year that I graduated from college, and engineering jobs were hard to find, which is kind of hard to imagine now, but it was true. I ended up taking an internship at the Massachusetts Port Authority, and during my internship worked with folks from HMH. And then HMH had a hiring need, and here I am. I wasn't actually initially interested in aviation or noise for that matter when I was hired, but the company's values and ethics and culture kept me engaged. I think the combination of technical work and policy is hard to find in a job. And I've really enjoyed the opportunity to become a national expert in something, which might not have happened if I'd taken a position as a transportation engineer, for example. So I've worked my way up at HMH from entry-level consultant to CEO along the way, acquiring an MBA, a husband, and two daughters.
And all the power and glory is yours right now, huh?
Something like that. And all the worries, too. HMH was started in 1981 specifically to assist airports to address aircraft noise problems. Since that time, we have expanded into other transportation modes, highway and all rail forms, and other services, notably air quality, renewable energy planning, sustainability, and NEPA. All of our services are related in that they I think they're difficult challenges that can constrain an airport or another transportation facility's ability to grow. Also, most of the issues that we deal with are highly technical and can be controversial. Generally, our audience is not technical, so effective communication is something we're pretty well known for. HMMH became a woman-owned business in 2014. And we are now certified in more than 30 states, which has really changed our business. We're a company of about 50 people in three offices and growing rapidly in the last couple of years.
Fantastic. And I definitely want to come back to kind of where your company is right now and some of the opportunities and challenges that you see. But let's talk about the industry in general. And I think over the years and watching you, you've really been at one of the leading figures in, again, engaging with the FAA and industry in general, and even internationally, on the whole issue of the role of noise and airports. I recently saw the head of facilities from a major airline note that, you know, there's billions and billions of dollars of capital programs and projects that are currently underway or being planned the biggest constraint that he saw was noise and local community concern over that. So give us a snapshot of kind of where we are right now as it relates to airports and noise, and what do you see in the future?
Okay. I often tell people that I think we're currently in the midst of a perfect storm of three colliding factors having to do with aircraft noise. First, airports are growing, and many airports are growing a lot. And even those airports that aren't growing quickly by adding new aircraft are seeing the aircraft be upgauged to larger ones. So really, for the first time in my career, we are seeing airports that have their noise contours increasing. And it's going to be a number of years before there's enough newer technology introduced to really address noise at the source. So this is not really a short-term problem. Then there's the issue of performance-based navigation, PBN, next-gen, whatever you want to call it. Satellite-based navigation really offers opportunities to improve safety, precision, efficiency, and even noise if it's done correctly. However, I think there were several decades of complacency that somehow we had solved the noise problem, and it made people forget that people react when you put planes in places they haven't been before. That said, I think that after several years of finger pointing and lawsuits, I think we're finally getting to a place on PBN where we have much better communication and better understanding how to design procedures correctly to minimize noise impacts. Unfortunately, we had to go through that difficult spot to get there. And then finally, I think social media has connected noise-affected communities and enabled them to share information quickly. So for example, one community member will develop an app to automatically submit noise complaints to the airport, you know, this button that you all hear about. And then within weeks, the app has propagated across the country to every airport in the country, and airports are reeling trying to keep up with it. And I think in many ways, the airports are now trying to develop their own communities so that they can similarly network to respond quickly. Looking forward, I see some of this turmoil sort of calming down a bit. As I already said, I think PBN is in a much better place than it was a couple of years ago, and we're less likely to see new problems cropping up there. I think communities and airports are getting more sophisticated about communication, and I see real dialogue taking place where a couple of years ago there was just a lot of shouting and misunderstanding. On the other hand, as I said, it's going to be a long time before we see actual noise levels decreasing. But one of the things that sort of gives me hope is that the research shows that only about 30% of people's annoyance to aircraft is actually related to the noise level. The rest is everything else. Obvious things like if they're home during the day. Airports tend to get a lot of complaints from people who recently retired and just didn't hear airplane noise before. Don't make that connection. But less obvious things like the attitude toward the airport. And more progressive airports like Heathrow are really starting to invest in research and ways to address these non-acoustic factors as possibly their only viable path toward a license to grow.
Interesting. And also, I've seen over the years, too, that you know, a lot when you look at PBN, a lot of that is really directed and implemented by the FAA. But it's really the airports that hear from the local communities. So we're, at least from where I sit, we're, you know, it's the airports trying to get out in front and the FAA as well, as it relates to starting to inform communities about what this is all about and why they're doing it and things like that. So I've seen a little bit of a change on that front.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think, as I said, people are really starting to work together and not, you know, they were playing sort of hot potato. For a while, that's not my problem, but I think everyone understands that it affects the entire aviation system. Mm-hmm.
We've seen Congress start to pay attention to this as well, and want to get your take on the new, I guess it's not so new, but the FAA reauthorization bill that was passed by Congress last October. There were a number of provisions dealing with noise. Were there one or two that really kind of caught your attention that you think might have the most impact?
Yeah, there were a few. So yeah, there in this subtitle D on airport noise and environmental streamlining, there were 22 provisions in all, and 14 of them dealt directly with noise. Most of those provisions require FAA to conduct or to complete studies that were already underway, including the FAA's 20 airport noise annoyance survey. That survey has actually, the technical work has been complete for some time, but it has been under administration review. The reauthorization actually now requires FAA to publish the results of that survey and to review land use compatibility guidelines within 2 years, which would be October 2020, right before the election. That has the possibility of being a game changer, not only for land use compatibility planning, but for NEPA and noise mitigation thresholds. The other area from the other provision that I think is worth paying attention to is the requirement that FAA exercise leadership in the creation of policies and standards regarding civil supersonic aircraft. This reflects the U.S. leadership in this area and the fact that U.S. manufacturers are very serious about bringing this technology to market in the next couple of years. I don't think it will have actually a lot of impact in the immediate vicinity of airports, but it's more likely to impact people sort of at a flyover level. But as we've seen with PBN, when people don't know where to turn, they call their local airport. So it may in the end up coming back to
you. Gotcha. Good. Thank you for that. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the architectural and engineering design industry. So you're CEO of a smaller specialized firm. Talk a little bit about what you think some of the advantages are from kind of where your company sits, and also talk a little bit about some of your biggest challenges that you think you face.
As a small firm, I think we have a couple of real advantage over our larger industry colleagues. First, I'd like to think that we are more nimble, which allows us to identify industry needs and quickly fill the gap. One example of this is our renewable energy practice. About 10 years ago, we saw that airports were starting to implement solar facilities, but they didn't really have the expertise to plan them properly, particularly when it came to airport-specific issues like solar glare. So we, HRMH, hired someone from the energy industry and developed a practice around solar siting, which is frankly not a large enough market to interest most larger firms, but something we're happy to be the leaders in. Being relatively small also allows individuals in our firm to do many kinds of things. So everybody does a bit of technical work, writing, business development, etc. Transparency is hugely important to us, and so we share financial results every month, which allows everyone to feel very invested in our success, as many of us literally are. The challenges are that we sometimes are not on an even playing field, I think, when I like to joke that our entire marketing budget is probably a tenth of what one of our larger firms spends on an ACI conference. So we have to be very judicious about where we spend those dollars. And frankly, in any kind of investment that we make, we don't have a lot of cushion to experiment. And so our return on our investments, on all of our investments, needs to be fairly high.
Understood. And also, I think you've had some new hires lately. And I think a lot of companies, in order to get and attract the right people, you know, they're looking at a lot more remote situations. Is that something that you've had to undertake as well?
Yes. Yeah. We're now at a point where 25% of our company works remotely. It's funny that every conference I go to, I hear that the number one issue is hiring and recruiting staff. And we are blessed, I think, to not be in that position where we have had people coming to us and we've had our choice of candidates in most situations. So I think that I attribute that to a couple of things. One being that we are a smaller firm and offer a lot of growth opportunity for individuals. I think also, that because we're an environmental firm, that's pretty appealing to particularly millennial generation, Generation Z or whatever, you know, young folks who are looking to work in a firm that has a purpose and a, mm-hmm. a cause.
Yeah, good point. So let's, one thing I've really appreciated with you, you know, coming through the ranks within ACC and particularly driving our strategic plan is your passion about, you know, getting new entries into our industry and also really, you know, start having the conversation about diversity and what we need to do to attract more women, minorities, and things like that in our industry. So kind of give us a lay of the land of where you think the A&E industry is as it relates to, you know, women and diversity and talk a little bit about that if you could.
Okay. Well, the main point that I want to make on this topic that is that I never would have predicted 35 years ago when I started working that this would still be an issue. I mean, mm-hmm. it just astounds me. That said, I see a couple of short-term challenges followed by long-term optimism. So in the short term, and this is particularly a challenge that I place before our ACC colleagues, if you look around at the leadership of the top airports in the U.S., you'll see a very high percentage of women leaders. I calculated it a couple of years ago, and it was over 35%. I haven't recalculated, but I think it might even be higher now. And that is definitely not the case among most of our ACC member firms, especially mm-hmm. the larger ones. I know that all of these big firms are trying. They all have diversity programs, but it's about more than just recruiting women. It's also about inclusion and developing paths to leadership, offering opportunities and recognizing unconscious bias. I think because with more than half of degrees being granted to women now, there's really no excuse. And the same goes for minority diversity and inclusion, only to an even greater extent. If you look around, you can at any given conference, you can see we're making some progress with regard to incorporating more women in our organizations, but we're not doing nearly as well when we look at minorities. In the long term, though, I look at my 15-year-old who is accepting of all genders. And whose generation, it seems, doesn't care to impose stereotypes of any kind on anyone. So sometimes I think that this problem's just going to sort itself out because these kids just, they just won't accept that kind of bias. And maybe we old people just need to get out of the
way. And I believe you have, there are some studies that have been shown as it relates to, you know, women in leadership and diverse boards and things like that, and how they're, you know, them as an organization are more productive and higher profits and things like that. Am I correct there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are entire organizations that exist that to convince people of that. And I, as I said, I don't think most of the large firms need to be convinced anymore. It's just the challenge of making it happen. And
well, I really appreciate your efforts in this. In our strategic plan, we have some very targeted action items as it relates to not only attracting the next generation of airport development experts into our industry, but making sure that we have diversity there, women represented, minorities represented. And also, you know, we have some very specific goals and action items relating to continuing to educate our member companies on, you know, why they should be doing this and actually how to do it. How can they implement, you know, policy strategies and environment where they can help foster the elevation of women and minorities within their organizations into leadership positions. So I understand, you know, we have a ways to go, but hopefully want to start moving that that up the hill in the next coming years. So Mary Ellen, we're going to wrap up here. Tell us something about yourself that, you know, we wouldn't see from your bio. What do you enjoy doing, or what's something that might surprise us about you?
I have a house in Maine.
I know.
Happy place. Come visit. Yes. Come visit, and I'll buy you a lobster.
Well, yeah, indeed, and I know what it's like to get away. And actually, you fairly often we use that as an opportunity to continue to kind of work and look more strategically at your organization. I know you kind of use that as it relates to, you know, assessing ACC as well, but it's a good opportunity to get away and not only, you know, reconnect with your family, but also step away from the day-to-day activities and maybe think more strategically about your company as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a job that never really goes away.
Indeed. And you sent a recent picture of the Adirondack chair that ACC provided you as a gift, and it looked lovely on your front porch overlooking the lovely landscape of Maine. So hopefully you're enjoying that.
Yes, it's even better with a cocktail.
And I agree. Or an IPA. Mary Ellen, thanks so much for joining us. Really enjoyed the conversation and love to catch up with you sometime, maybe next year, and kind of see how we're doing with the strategic plan, see how you're doing with your company. Always enjoy conversing with you.
Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for spending some time with us in the Hold Room. Check back in the next couple of weeks for our next episode. We continue to be really excited about this project and are looking forward to hearing from you. Please take some time, find us on social media, and let us know who we should talk to next. As always, you can access all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts or at the ACC Training Hub at training.acconline.org. We'll see you again in the Hold Room.